Bibles to Numbers chapter 32, verse 5. Numbers chapter 32, verse 5. Numbers chapter 32, verse 5. There are several people I would like for this congregation to meet. You have heard me say many disparaging things about evangelists. There is, of course, one exception who is with us tonight, and I would like for a moment if Angel Martinez would stand up, please. We're happy to have you. I would also like to present a very fine officer here from SAC, Colonel Mays, Director of Training at Barksdale Air Force Base. Colonel Mays. And several people have not been able to see what a real cadet crew cut is like, so I'm going to ask Cadet Robert B. Thieme III to stand up. And just in from the Battle of Chancellorsville is Colonel Roy Hurst. All right, point five. Point five, there is a time when it's sinful not to go to war. There comes a time when it is sinful not to go to war. Numbers chapter 33, beginning at verse 5. Numbers chapter 32, beginning at verse 5. Now, in this particular passage, we're going to study a very beautiful principle. And this principle is connected with why do we fight in another country for the protection of our country? Why is it necessary to cross the water and to fight in Europe, to fight in Asia, to fight in the Philippines, to fight in the Marshalls and the Carolines? Why is it necessary to go elsewhere to fight? Why is it necessary to send troops to the Middle East? Why is it necessary to protect our country, to send troops across the water? This is answered for us in Numbers chapter 32, beginning at verse 5. Wherefore, said they, this is, of course, the tribes of Reuben and Gad and a few from Manasseh. Now, here's the picture. Here's a body of water, not a very big one. That's the Jordan. On this side of the Jordan, where we now have Transjordania, was once very beautiful cattle country at the time of the writing of Numbers. Over here, we have the tribe of Reuben, and at the tribe of Gad, and their cattlemen. And this is where they want to settle down. The rest of the Jews are going to cross the Jordan. They're going to set up a perimeter at Gilgal, and from there they're going to branch out and conquer the land. Now, Reuben and Gad have settled down in their ranches, and they don't want to go. So this becomes the issue which forms the principle of our point five. There comes a time when it is sinful not to go to war. Wherefore said they, Reuben, Gad, and a few of the Manassites, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and do not force us to go over the Jordan. We don't want to cross the river. Our land is here. Why should we fight on the other side of the river? And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, these are the tribes, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? It's a question that every young American has to ask himself today. Shall others go to war, and shall I sit here? Wherefore discourage ye the right lobe of the children of Israel by hanging out and staying back, holding back. This is going to spread to others. It's like a little leaven, leavening the whole lump. And over here in the right lobe, we have norms and standards. Here is the left lobe where we have perception. And this is going to disturb and discourage the norm and standard lobe here, and is going to make cowards and ineffective soldiers out of the rest. So in verse 7, why do you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which God hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And then he describes what a mess they made of things at Kadesh Barnea. Now he says in verse 14, and you are just like your fathers. Behold, you are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful man. Please notice, these draft card burners are called sinful. These so-called conscientious objectors are called sinful. He said, you're just like your fathers at Kadesh Barnea. At Kadesh Barnea, they were yellow. At Kadesh Barnea, they refused to go in the land. They refused to claim the promises of God. The reconnaissance team came back and said, there are giants in the land. And they all sat around and cried all night. Next day, on a wave of emotion, they decided to charge up the hill, and they got clobbered. Now, here's the principle. You are an increase of sinful men to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. Those who avoid military service can be construed not only to be sinful, but to bring the Lord's anger down upon the whole land. Thank you, Sergeant. Verse 15. If ye turn away from after him, after God, he will yet again leave them in the desert, and ye shall destroy all his people. Two tribes reneging, two tribes burning their draft cards, and they're going to destroy all of the people. You see, all you need is a large number, in this case two tribes, of people to turn yellow and start screaming about being conscientious objectors. And what do? You destroy all of the people. That's what the National Council of Churches is trying to do to us today. They're trying to destroy our military. And what they are trying to do is put us in slavery. They'll get a front row in the barbed wire. Now he says in verse 16, and they came near unto him, or they speak now, and said, all right, we'll build our sheepfolds here for our cattle, and our cities for little ones. These are fortified cities. But we ourselves will go ready armed. They are going ready armed. That means we will send our trained men before the children of Israel until we have brought them into their place, conquest of the land. And our little ones shall dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. They'll be protected. And so they decide they'll go. And verse 20, Moses said unto them, if ye will do this thing, if ye will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until he hath driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel. And this land shall be your possession before the Lord. In other words, in Transjordania, they would be, while that's their land, when they are fighting on the right side of the Jordan, they are defending and fighting for their own land. Sometimes you have to move away from your land geographically to defend it. In fact, it's a good idea. And in principle, these two tribes are fighting a preventative war. And they are fighting for the peace and the preservation of their children and their families. And therefore, it is right and just to cross a body of water, to go somewhere else, to fight for the defense of your country. And I submit to you, the men in uniform who are fighting in South Vietnam today and in Asia are fighting for your freedom. And you say, it isn't a just war. It is a just war. The communist is a vicious, evil, rotten monster that should be destroyed. And whether he is an Asiatic communist, whether his name is Ho Chi Minh, who is now in hell, or whether it's somebody in Russia, when we have to go to fight somewhere, we should kill as many as possible, as quickly as possible, in order that we can have peace in our time. These doves are going to cause World War III. Ye shall be guiltless, it says in verse 22. But now verse 23. And this verse is dedicated to those of you who are draft dodgers, who call yourselves conscientious objectors. You're either stupid or a coward. But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord. Now get this. I was going to say every evangelist I've ever heard has used this one when he's gone a booze message or on an adultery message or something of that sort, and this isn't what it means at all. Take it in context. Ye have sinned against the Lord. Be sure your sin will find you out. And how does your sin find you out? Your country is conquered. Your nation is destroyed. The people go into slavery. And your sin of cowardice and your sin of being a draft dodger finds you out. It is sinful not to go to war at certain times. And this is one of them. So a principle is established. There are times when it is a sin not to go to war, and you be sure your sin will find you out. And if you're a hippie or a yippie or a draft dodger or a so-called conscientious objector, you be sure your sin will find you out. That's where this passage applies. Verse 31. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben had something to say then, namely, yes, sir. In the middle of verse 31, as the Lord has said unto thy servants, so we will do. We will pass over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, that the possession of our inheritance on this side of Jordan may be, underline it, ours. We will go over and fight on the other side so that with this part, this land will be ours. And let me tell you something. If the land we occupy now is going to be ours, we're going to have to start fighting in other places. I would suggest as a starter, Cuba. We should either go over there and knock out Cuba, bomb it out of existence, or go over there and take it and capture every Russian missile site and sink every Russian ship in the Caribbean. We're going to have to start going elsewhere, or they're going to come to us. We have enemies. Let's face it. The Russian communists and the Asiatic Mongolian communists are out to get us. They're out to destroy us. We know their plans. Their plans call for our destruction. And when you know someone is out to kill you, what are you going to do? Stand around and wait to be killed? No. You go get them. We'll call that preventative war. But the principle we're going to deal with here, it is sinful not to go to war under certain conditions specified in context. And listen, if this sin is on a large enough scale, be sure your sin will find you out. You'll find yourself dead in a prison camp in slavery, and you will see things before you died that you won't even believe they're so horrible. Be sure your sin will find you out, you draft dodgers, you yellow belly cowards. Next point. My critics call that an angry outburst. I assure you it isn't anger. It's dogma. Point six. However, war demands training. Repeat. War demands training. You can't pick up a weapon and go to war. Training is absolutely necessary. We'll start with Numbers 31, 3 through 5. It's right here. Numbers 31, 3. War demands training. And Moses spake unto the people, saying, arm yourselves for war. This doesn't mean just pick up weapons. It means start training. Like Abraham trained 218 of his servants to be soldiers as well as cattlemen. Arm yourselves, train yourselves for war. And then let them after training go against the Midianites and avenge the Lord of Midian. Please notice, training before they go to war. They do not go to war without training. Out of every tribe, 1,000 will be trained. That's verse 4. Then verse 5, so they were delivered out of the thousands of Israel. Just think of it. Here are many, many thousands of people, but they only took 1,000 from each tribe. So they were delivered, this is a draft, out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 from each tribe, 12,000 who were trained for combat. The original standing army of the Jews numbered 12,000. Principle here, before warfare, there must be training. Otherwise, it's just a slaughter. Look at Judges chapter 3, verse 2. Another verse in the same area. Judges chapter 3, verse 2. This is what happened to the many times in the book of Judges, the Jews were enslaved. Why? Because they neglected military training. Right in the beginning of Judges, we find this principle. Judges chapter 3, verse 2. Only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. Notice what it says. When you have a new generation, they know nothing about warfare or military activity. They must be taught. And so we have the command from the Lord, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war. Every generation must be taught warfare. Every generation. Every generation must know how to function as a combat team. Self-discipline, group discipline, the works. And because they neglected this verse, you're going to find as you read through the book of Judges, that many times the Jews were enslaved as long as 20 years, a whole generation, because they failed to learn warfare. Please notice, war has to be taught. Our principle, to teach them war. It has to be taught. You don't pick it up on your own. The same thing is found in Luke 14:31. You don't go to war without training. Now, there was a very famous military writer who lived in the latter days of the Roman Empire. And he was very disturbed because the Romans no longer were victorious and the Roman military was declining. Problem? Civilian interference with the military. And because they were doing it, a man by the name of Flavius Vegetus Renatus wrote a book. It is one of the military classics, along with the writings of von Clausewitz and Erfurt and Fuller and Lanza and Frederick the Great and Marshal Saxe and many other great military writers. And he wrote this to the emperor, and the purpose was to try to improve the quality of military training among the Romans. I want to read you one paragraph with regard to Roman discipline as the cause of their greatness. Quote, this is written now to the Emperor Valentinian. Quote, victory in war does not depend on numbers or mere courage. Only skill and discipline will ensure victory. Please notice that's military training. Skill and discipline. We find that the Romans owed the conquest of the world to no other cause than continual military training, exact observance of discipline in their camps, and unwearied cultivation of the arts of war. Very principle of Judges chapter 3, verse 2. He continues, without these, what chance would the Roman armies, with their inconsiderable numbers, have against the multitude of the Gauls? Or with what success, and for the same reason, could they have successfully opposed the multitudes of Germans? The Spaniards surpassed us not only in numbers, but in physical strength. We were always inferior to the Africans, that is the Carthaginians, in wealth, and unequal to them in deception and strategy. The Greeks indisputably were far too superior to us in skill, in arts of all kinds, and in knowledge. But to all these advantages, the Romans opposed unusual care in the choice of their recruits and in their military training. They thoroughly understood the importance of hardening them by continual practice and by training them in every maneuver in line and in action. Nor were they less strict in punishing idleness and sloth, goal-breaking. Continuing, the courage of a soldier is heightened by his knowledge of his profession, and he only wants an opportunity to execute what he is convinced has been perfectly taught to him. A handful of men inured to war proceeds to certain victory, while, on the contrary, numerous armies of raw and undisciplined troops are but masses of men dragged to the slaughter. End quote. No one has ever succeeded without good military training. And I'm sure we have a few offenders here. Every person who ever wrote their congressman complaining about military training has done great harm to the military establishment and is personally responsible for the death of many fine young men who have gone to battle. Mothers and even fathers stupidly complaining because their sons had a bucket over their head and a DI hit it a few times. He didn't hit it enough times. Or my poor boy was bruised. Or my poor boy got shot in the gluteus maximus. He should have had it down when he's crawling. Our military training today has come under civilian influence. Captain Tom Pickering, one of our fine young men on our prayer list, a hero of this war, says that he is only allowed to give 10 push-ups to these recruits. So many leg lifts. Why, they have to treat them like babies. Why? Because people write their congressmen, and the congressmen have interfered with military training. We need to go back to beast barracks. We need to train the congressmen. I'd love to have Fulbright in my outfit. I think I'd have him start out by digging a slit trench all the way to China. We are being destroyed today by civilian interference with every form of education, including military training. As one of the tragic things in the destruction of a nation. And here Vegetius recognizes it back in his day, that this was the cause of destruction. All right, point 7. Warfare demands mental attitude of moral and battle courage. Warfare demands the mental attitude of moral and battle courage. Deuteronomy chapter 20. Back to Deut. And if one more young lady looks at her watch, I'm going to take up 10 more points. Some of you girls may want to go out on a date, but you just remember this. You're not running this show. We need a little basic training for young ladies. Turn that over to Herman. Deuteronomy chapter 20. War demands a mental attitude of both moral and battle courage. And here we have it again, when thou goest to battle, and it's when you spring forth with courage, yatsah, to battle against thine enemies. And all of a sudden, see, you have all this courage. You're marching down a road, and all of a sudden the enemy is out in front of you. And you see him. And this is what you see. You see horses and chariots and a large body of infantry, people more than thou. What are you going to do? Be not afraid of them. Kel imperfect of Yare. Yare represents a mental attitude sin. Now, to have qualms before a battle, to have a peculiar feeling in the solar plexus before the kickoff of a football game, is not sinful, wrong, or even cowardice. It is the allowing and catering to this that leads to cowardice. And when you see a great army drawn up, and you're just infantry, and they have armor, and they have cavalry, and they have a larger body of infantry than you have, the first thing you do, you don't hit the dirt. The first thing you do is be not afraid. And then you proceed. You cannot maneuver, you cannot function as a military organization when you're neutralized by fear. So the very first thing you do is to have a mental attitude which draws upon the spiritual resources of the right lobe. Here is where you must have doctrine, and that doctrine is cycled up from the human spirit. It goes in this way, and it comes up here. Be not afraid. And it means always be not afraid. Cal imperfect. For the Lord thy God is with thee. He's not with the cowards at home. He's with the men who go to battle. He's the one that brought you up out of Egypt. And if he delivered you from Egypt before you had military training, when you were just a bunch of civilians, he can deliver you now. You're better off now than you were then. See, that's why he mentions Egypt. Verse 2. And it shall be when you come nigh to the battle that the chaplain, here's the priest, shall approach and speak to the people. First of all, the chaplain speaks. And his job is to prepare the men spiritually and morally for battle. And he shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, you approach this day into battle against your enemies. You're about to go into combat. All right, what's the command? Let not your hearts, the norm and standard lobe, let them not faint. And the verb is rakak, which means to go soft. Looks like this. R-A-K-A-K. Cal imperfect. And it means to go soft. It's the kind of a person who would freeze on a trigger when he has a definite target and start to think about that poor person or gets, for some reason, he gets cowardly instead of just calmly squeezing off a shot or giving a short burst and cutting him in two. When in combat, the job is to kill the enemy. It is the Christian responsibility of the believer. It should be done as unto the Lord, and that means cutting to ribbons. If it's hand-to-hand combat, use the procedures. Use a knife. Use anything. Don't use a grenade if it's hand-to-hand because you get hurt. Now, the chaplain tells them this. Why? Because warfare has a spiritual principle. Warfare is the basis for the surviving of divine institution number 4. And because Americans have done a good job of killing, you're here today. That is, Americans in the past. Now, this means to go soft in the head. This means you'd freeze at the trigger. Let not your right lobe faint. Rakak. Go soft. Then we have the word fear not. That's Yahweh again. Do not tremble. That means don't jump up and run. The verb is kafaz. Looks like this. C-H-A-P-A-Z, kafaz. Don't run away. Neither be ye terrified. That means don't cause others to be frightened. That's our rats. Don't run away yourself. Don't cause others to be frightened. A-R-A-T-Z, our rats. Now, this is the instructions from the chaplain. Verse 4, for the Lord your God, he it is that goes with you. This is the believer. He goes with you. And the word to go here means to walk. He walks with you in combat. Calactive participle of halak. He keeps on walking with you in combat. H-A-L-A-K, halak. He keeps on walking with you in combat. To fight for you. And that word means to fight to kill. That's lacham, which means to kill. L-A-C-H-A-M. Lacham. Of course, a lot of you people are wondering what happened to the Sermon on the Mount. At halftime, we had a few questions on that. I can't answer a lot of questions in detail. I'm trying to save my voice. All you need to do is to get the Sermon on the Mount tapes. That is personal, that is individual. Most of it applies to the millennium. Jesus Christ was presenting himself as king, and this was the king platform. Rejection of the king is the rejection of that platform, so don't turn your other cheek until the millennium. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You roll over on your back and wag your tail and see how much of the earth you inherit. You get stomped to death. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth means when Jesus Christ is ruling, when the lion and the lamb lie down side by side. That's all the National Council of Churches knows, is a couple of Beatitudes and a little bit of the Sermon on the Mount. And it doesn't even apply to us today. This is the church age. This is the time of wars and rumors of wars. And some of you smirking, self-righteous females better remember, you get raped, that's coming up tomorrow, if someone doesn't fight. So there's no sense in smirking because you're the victims of war just as much as anyone else. Just because you run around with some long-haired flower child doesn't mean that you're safe. Some of you will be back tomorrow anyway. Some of you obviously do not belong here. You better get some barbed wire in your backyard and sit there every day because that get used to it. You may be lucky. For the Lord your God, verse 4, he that walks with you to fight for you against your enemies. And the word fight, lachem, means to consume your enemies, to destroy your enemies, not to fight, to destroy for you your enemies for the purpose of delivering you. Hifil infinitive of Yashah. Doesn't mean to save here. They're already saved. Yashah, J-A-S-H-A, means, that's where we get Joshua, by the way. It means to deliver. Hifil infinitive, to cause you to be delivered. If you are going to be delivered, your enemies must die. And every young man that goes to war should remember, if your enemy doesn't die, you're not going to be delivered. And if you want deliverance in battle, don't run around and say, oh God, just kill the enemy. Don't run around and yell, oh God, help. Don't get in a foxhole and start crying like a baby. Kill the enemy. And you'll be delivered. The only way to be delivered in warfare is over the dead bodies of the enemy. Now, some of you mothers don't like it. But you might as well learn that when your young men go to war, if they come back and this country is preserved, it's because they've turned into excellent before the Lord, do it as unto the Lord, killers. You hate to say, I hate to think of my son doing. Listen. If your son is any kind of a man, you may not be much of a mother. But if your son's any kind of a man, he'll come back with the blood of the enemy on his hands and you'll be free. That's why we're a free country today. We're not a free country because of the politicians. They ruin us. We're a free country because Americans have come back with blood on their hands in an honorable, wonderful cause. And in the history of our country, millions of people have died in other parts of the world and in this country that we might be a free nation today. And just because you're stupid and don't know where your freedom comes from, the source of your freedom is the wars of this country. And if you will look at your American history book, you will find that 1% of your history book is devoted to the wars that have freed you, and 99% the politicians who have ruined you. You never see the State Department out there fighting. Well, some of you have a nice holiday tomorrow because I see you're not coming back, and I don't blame you. With your mixed-up attitude, you ought to go somewhere and hide. You ought to get in your closet tomorrow and stay there. Let your clothes come to class. All right, verse 5. Now the officers get into it. Starting with second lieutenants, one of our big problems is that we have a lot of men who have gone through our ROTC programs for the purpose of avoiding combat. One of the key person in any military organization is not a sergeant. It's a second lieutenant. Usually he's green as grass. In a combat situation, he'll have a platoon. So much depends on second lieutenants. And second lieutenants, there's no in-between. They're either cowards and they run away, or they become great heroes and they'll be a first lieutenant overnight, battlefield promotion. Or dead. But the second lieutenant is the backbone of a military service. And therefore the officers, who have to be twice as courageous as the men, because cowardice is like leaven, it leavens the whole lump. And therefore the officers now make a speech. Now, some of you fading females, read along. I've never seen so many pitiful women here tonight. What's the matter? Don't you have Bibles? All right, the officers shall speak unto the people. These are the soldiers saying, what man is there that hath built a new house and hath not dedicated it? How do you dedicate a house? You live in it for a year. Well, he's built a new house, but he hasn't dedicated. He hasn't lived in it for a year. So he lived in isolation with his wife. Let him go and return to his house. Why? The word lest is a negative purpose clause, that he not die in battle. In other words, he's a double-minded man, and a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. Tactics and battlefield situations require concentration, and you cannot concentrate on the enemy and think about some doll you left behind who has only been in the house for 2 days. He's going to get killed. You cannot divide your mind in battle. And if one part of your mind is thinking about that new house and that doll you left behind, you're going to get killed. You're going to get careless. You're going to fail to coordinate as a part of a combat team. And that's it. You've had it. Kaput. So the Jews were very smart about this. This guy's got to get out of there. He's going to be dead anyway. Might as well go home and be alive. So that some other bird who was a draft dodger doesn't dedicate his house for him. Verse 6. And what man is he that hath planted a vineyard? This is a person with a new business. And has not received the first year's profits. He's thinking about business. Some guys go to war and think about business, you see. Let him also go and return to his house, lest he die in battle, and another man get the profits from his business. Double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways, and warfare demands mental attitude and concentration. Then, of course, there's the guy that's engaged. What man is there that betrothed a wife? He found his right woman, but he hasn't taken her yet. He hasn't consummated the marriage. Let him get out of there and go home, because he'll be the first to die, lest he die in battle and another man take her. See, here are three kinds of people that are going to get killed. It happens every time. It'll make no difference what part of the service they're in. They're flying an airplane, they're going to crack it up. You have to concentrate in combat. It requires concentration. So much for some legitimate reasons to get people out of there. They're no good to you. They're going to get killed. Verse 8 takes up the coward. Now, the other categories are not cowards. They just can't concentrate. Verse 8. And the officers shall speak further to the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? The word fearful is an adjective meaning frightened, and the word faint-hearted means cowardly, soft. He's not willing to kill the enemy. He's going to go out there and close his eyes and pull the trigger and hit a piece of sky. That means to be faint-hearted, soft in the head. Let him go and return to his house. Why? Not because he's going to die. He's a coward. He's not going to die. But he's going to cause others to faint as well in their right lobe, and then they'll all be running away. So the cowards must be eliminated. Now, what is the job when they get into combat? Verse 13. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. You kill them. Verse 17, thou shalt utterly destroy them. It's kill or be killed, and no country can survive without the killing of its enemies. Now this brings us through the first 7 points of our study of the doctrine of warfare. Let's review point one. Warfare will always exist in history in spite of man's efforts for peace. Matthew 24:6, Mark 13:7, Luke 21:9. The exception is the millennium, Isaiah 2:4, Micah 4:3. Therefore, wars are a bona fide part of history, Ecclesiastes 3:8, Numbers 21:14. Point two. War is for adults, Numbers 1:3 and 26:2. The exception, Deuteronomy 24:5, and the war can also be the basis for discovering the right woman, Deuteronomy 21:10 through 14. Point 3, annihilation and decisive defeat of the enemy brings peace. Joshua 11:23, 14:15, Psalm 46:8 through 11. Point 4, just warfare is from God. 1 Chronicles 5:19 through 22. Point 5, there comes a time when it's sinful not to go to war. Numbers 32:5 through 23. Point 6, however, war demands training. Numbers 31:3 through 5, Judges 3:2, Luke 14:31. 7, war demands a mental attitude of both moral and battle courage. It requires concentration. You cannot be thinking about something else and survive and be successful in warfare. Tomorrow we'll resume with point 8 and our study of the doctrine of warfare. Thank you, Father, for the privilege of studying these things. May God the Holy Spirit enlighten us with regard to this particular subject, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.